Good morning to everybody. Bokitov. Nice to see everybody here. Okay, more copies are being made. So if you didn't get a copy, Ricky's on it. And Be'ezat Hashem, in a few minutes, they'll all be coming downstairs. For those of you who were here last week, you will know that we are in a search for the Tchelet, for the blue thread that is put on the tzitzit. And we saw last week many, many sources, 40 plus Makorot. We'll see this week there are very few sources, but lots of discussion. Last week we saw a lot of sources about what the Tchelet is. We know that it comes from a Chilazon, or at least we think we know that. Today we'll readdress that a little. And the Chilazon is some kind of a sea creature. We gave from Chazal last week a number of different criteria that they bring as to what, how to identify the Chilazon, that it looks like the sea, and it looks, it's created to look like a fish, and it lives down in the sand, and you find it on the shores of the Mediterranean between Haifa and Sur. This is all stuff that we discussed last week. And that somehow you crack it or you squeeze it, and you turn its secretion into a dye. We talked about the color of that dye. What color could that be? And we saw a range of opinions from a bright blue, the sky in the midday, ranging to the sky towards evening, and maybe even the midnight blue, Rashi suggests, of the sky in the middle of the night. And today, what I'd like to do with you is talk about the attempts that have been made over the last 200 years to actually find the Tchelet. And we're going to talk a lot about a few very important figures. We're going to be looking at archaeology, chemistry. We're going to be looking at many of the greats of the 20th century in Israel and in Chutz La'aretz. So if you have the sheet, and if you don't, you'll have one in a few minutes. Let's look together. There's quite a lot of words on the sheet, but don't worry, we don't have to read every single one of them. And there are a lot of pictures as well. For those of you who are into chemistry, there's a little bit of chemical discussion on the back. We'll see how it goes. Let's first ask the question, is it legitimate to even look for the Tchelet? Maybe it's out of bounds. And we saw this last week in a source that I've repeated on today's sheet, number one, which is a source from the Tanchuma, that even though we know it's very clear that Chazal had Tchelet, and we looked at many examples of that last week, up until the end of the time of the Gemara, already by the Midrash Tanchuma around the year 750, it says as follows. Mitzvah lahavi lavanu tchelet v'yaseh. You have to bring lavan, white string, although we'll see it doesn't have to be white, but we call it lavan, and tchelet, this blue, let's call it string, v'yaseh, make your tzitzit. Eimatayin, when can you do that? Kishehu tchelet, when you have tchelet. V'achshav, says the Tanchuma. Nowadays, in around the 8th century, Ein lanu ela lavan. We only have the lavan, we do not have the tchelet. She hatchelet nignaz. The tchelet has been hidden. It's gone. It's been hidden away. And the question is, what does that mean, it's been hidden away? Does that mean we just lost it? We just practically just don't know how to do it, and therefore we can't do it? Or does that mean on some deeper, hashkafic, philosophical level, it's been removed, it's out of bounds, we cannot get to the tchelet because it's something that has been put into geniza in that sense. Geniza normally implies something purposely put away because it's special and kaddish. And indeed, the Arizal writes, in number two, sorry, there's a mistake on the reference in number two, it doesn't come from Anachas, it comes from the Derech Etzachayim in the part that deals with tzitzit. I'll correct that. Ki ha'emet hu, the truth is, says the Arizal, Shebizman hazeh, today, and the Arizal's writing in the 1500s, Achrei hachurban, after the destruction of the temple, Ein banu koach lehatil tchelet. We have no koach, I don't think it means physical strength, but we have no ability to make tchelet. Why? And he gives a Kabbalistic reason, which I don't have any understanding of, but you'll understand better than me. Ki ein anu masigin, because nowadays we only reach rak ad moach bina de ima. Now all of these are code words in halacha, bina and ima. Ima and abba are two kinds of parsufim, two emanations of the way we see God. But I don't have a clue, I'm not a Kabbalist, I don't know what this means. But the Arizal knows what this means, and he's telling us that we can't have tchelet because for some reason after the churban, it's hidden from us. Now that Ariza is a little bit difficult because we had Tchelis after the Churban. Tchelis did not die out with the Churban by Sheni. We had it during the time of the Mishnah, during the time of the Gemara, maybe even into the early Gaonim. However, the Aruch HaShulchan, who lived, of course, in the early 20th century, picks this up and indeed says, you cannot have Tchelis. It is out of bounds. Let's look at the Aruch HaShulchan number 3. Tanya. Hay Rabbi Meir Omer. He quotes from the Chazal here. Rabbi Meir said, God lo ansh shel lavan, mi ansh shel Tchelis. If someone neglects to put on the white strings, they get a greater punishment than someone who neglects to put on the blue strings. Why? Bishum de lavan not for you. Because white strings are easy to find. B'chol makom, they're everywhere. Ubenek lasik, they're easy to get hold of. Ve'im kol zeh lo asa. And if despite the fact that they're so abundant, anyone can make a little bit of wool, you didn't do it, then that's a big problem. Lefikach onsho meruba. Therefore, there's a serious punishment. Masha einkein, but tcheles, whereas with tcheles, say Chazal, shidam of yikarim, where it's very expensive, kashul ahasik, it's very hard to get hold of. Lefikach ein onsho gadol kamosh behed alavam. It's not as bad if you neglect to wear tcheles because it's very hard to get hold of, and you know we have sympathy for you. We understand you couldn't get it, you couldn't afford it, so you only wore lavam. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan picks up on this and adds the following comment of his own: Uba avonei seinu, for our sins, mizman shenitpazru, from the time that we were scattered. Now he doesn't mention the Churban here. He says from the time that we were scattered, which does fit historically with when we lost Tcheles, when we went into Galut, ein lanu Tcheles, we don't have Tcheles, they ein anu yodim mizeh klau, we don't know anything about Tcheles. V'kol tzitzis shalanu lavam, we only wear lavam today, v'kol makom anachnu mekaimim hamitzvah ketikuna. Nevertheless, he says, we still fulfill the mitzvah ketikuna. Now that's an interesting statement. What does it mean, ketikuna? Fully. We fully fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. Now, is that the case? How many mitzvahs are there in tzitzis? Is it two, a mitzvah of lavan and a mitzvah of tcheles, or is it one? Now, most of the people, those in the Rishonim who count mitzvahs, understand it to be one mitzvah. It's one mitzvah of lavan and tcheles together. And there's a discussion in the Gemara as to whether you need them both to do the mitzvah. The view of the Chachamim in the Mishnah is that you do not need them both. You can either wear lavan, and that's good enough for the mitzvah, or you can wear tchelet, and that's good enough. But if you have them both, that's what you might call a mitzvah b'shleimuta. That's a full fulfillment of a mitzvah. Whereas there is an opinion, actually, which is the opinion of Rebbe in the Mishnah, which is not ruled in halacha by many Rishonim, we'll see one who does, that actually they are ma'akev one the other, and if you don't have both, then you cannot do the mitzvah at all. Now, we don't rule like that, and that's why the Aruch HaShulchan says, if you just have white, then that's okay. But it's okay, but it's not b'shlimuta. You didn't do the mitzvah fully, but he said, look, that's all we can do, because that's all we have. The Kfar Mitzvah, we've already explained, she'at chelet einu ma'akev et halavah. The tchelet is not ma'akev v'lavan. You don't need the tchelet. And he seems to be indicating that it's good enough without the tchelet, but maybe not as good as it could be, as I said. Well, again, misha mevatel mitzvah zon, shomaruba, and therefore if you don't wear tzitzis, you don't get, make the effort to buy some white strings, then you're lazy and you could easily do that.
Do all these people that give their opinion, is it because you really can't find the truth?
Good, so look what he says now. V'da. Shezeh shanim tzipurot. A number of years ago, there was someone who came along who boasted that he had found the chilazon. Who was that? We'll see. It's the Radzina Rebbe. We'll talk about him in a couple of minutes. The Radzina Rebbe, he said that he found the chilazon. And he made his own tcheles. And a number of people followed him. Well, actually, that number was 10,000 Hasidim in Radzina Hasidus. So a number of people followed him. Ach, but lo haya lo shomei migdoli hador. None of the Gedoli Hador listened to him. Umichlal Yisrael, and no one in Klal Yisrael outside Radzina Hasidus listened to him, which is true. V'nitbatel hadavar ad kiyava goel tzedek bimheira v'yameinu amein. Mashiach. You need Mashiach. He said, you can forget about Tchelet. It ain't happening until Mashiach comes. And if somebody comes and claims that they found Tchelet, no one's going to listen to them. Just like no one, he says, listen to the Radzina Rebbe, apart from the Radzina Rebbe's own Chassidim, which is true. So if you follow the Arizal, if you follow the Aruch HaShulchan, there is no point to the search. There is, even if you think you found it, no one's going to listen to you because we need Mashiach to have Tchelet. And as I said before, that's a little bit tricky because we didn't have Mashiach after the Churban. Even before the Churban, we didn't have Mashiach, but we did have Tchelet. So why is it that you really need the Geula and Mashiach in order to achieve Tchelet? And the truth is that many of the Rishonim didn't hold it. Look in the Radvaz for a second in number 4. The Evsha, he says that he's already one of the Rishonim, the Radvaz. She'evsha, she'ad hayom. Humatsui, maybe Tchelet is all over. Maybe Chilazon is there for us to find. It's all over there in the sea. Ela she'ein makirin oto. The problem is not that we can't find it, it's that we just don't know what we're looking for. Or she'ein yod'im l'tzodo. Maybe we just don't have the technology to hunt it. But the clear implication of the Radvaz, and many, many, in fact I would say the vast majority of Rishonim, is that Tchelet is in principle doable. We just don't know how to do it. So there are those authorities, as I mentioned, the Arizal, the Aruch HaShulchan, that say, just forget about it. Even if you find it, we're not interested. And we'll see that in a number of senior poskim, specifically in the Haredi world, but also beyond, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, this is really the route that they went down, Lubavitcher Rebbe, that we're not interested. We don't even want to talk about Tchelet because it's waiting for Mashiach. Although we'll see later in the Shia that maybe the position of some of those people that I mentioned is not so posh. The fact is that in the 1800s, a number of people got very excited about Tchelet. And the first one really was the Tiferet Yisrael. The Tiferet Yisrael was Rav Baruch Yisrael Lipschitz, and he lived in Germany in the early to mid-1800s. And he wrote a whole introduction, he wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, which is very well known, the Tiferet Yisrael, and he wrote an introduction in his Seder Moed, which is called the Kupat HaRochlim. And in there he goes through all the things that we need in order to make the big day kahuna. Now today, of course, we have the Temple Institute, we have the Machon HaMikdash, and we have a number of kohanim around Yerushalayim and beyond with the big day kahuna hanging in their wardrobe, in the closet, waiting for Mashiach to come. I think Rabbi Riskin has a set hanging in his closet in Efrat, so if he hears the clarion call for Mashiach, he can pick it up and run. And he would, I'm sure. And the Tiferet Yisrael got very excited and started to describe this. Now, I'm not 100% sure why he picked up on this specifically. It could be, although I can't prove it, because of Napoleon. In 1799, when the Tiferet Yisrael was a little boy, Napoleon tried to invade Eretz Yisrael. And he issued a proclamation to the Jews of Asia and Africa that if they supported him against the Ottoman Turks, he would give them a country and he would rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Napoleon Bonaparte. The Jews were in a real dilemma, both in Eretz Yisrael and North Africa. Do they support Napoleon, who's going to build them a Mikdash? He says he's going to build them a Mikdash. You know, campaign promises by politicians don't always turn out the way they promise. We'll see. Or do they support the Ottoman Turks, who have no intention at all about building a Mikdash? More about that when we talk about Har HaBayit over the next few weeks. Similarly, in Russia, the Jews were very torn. Do they support Napoleon, who's going to overthrow the Tsar, but is going to bring in liberté, égalité, and fraternité, and every Jew is going to be able to do their own thing? Or do they support a vicious, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish Tsar, who is at least going to keep the Jews living Jewishly in their Jewish ghettos? In the end, almost all the Jews supported the Tsar and the Ottomans, and not Napoleon. And Napoleon lost, not, I think, because of the lack of Jewish support. He lost because of other military issues on the beaches of Akko. But it's interesting to speculate whether his announcement about he's going to build a Beit HaMikdash is one of the things that got everybody a little excited in the early 1800s. Anyway, the Tiferet Yisrael wrote his introduction. One of the controversial things that he said is that he doesn't think that Tchelet has to come from the Chilazon. If you can produce a dye which is the right color and is steadfast, is permanent, that might be good enough. And this got everybody jumping up and down. Please go over the page. One of the people who was very unhappy with the statement was Rav Gershon Chanoch Leiner. Rav Gershon Chanoch Leiner was from an illustrious line, the line of Ishbitz, the line of Radzin, which I'm not getting into all of the history of the Hasidus, but he was also very excited about the idea of preparing the big day kahuna. And of course, we need Tchelet for the big day kahuna. That's really what's driving all of these people. And he objected very strongly to the statement to the Tiferet Yisrael that you could make tcheles using an alternative diet. And he said, no, we have to find the chilazon. And he wrote a sefer called Tzfunei Tzmunei Chol. There are some new sheets in it. Please put your hand up if you don't have a sheet. There's plenty for everybody. Ricky's going to give them out. He wrote a sefer, new sheets coming in for people who don't have them. I'll pick up a couple. Okay. Anyone else? We have a few more. Fine. Apologies for the brief gap. He wrote a sefer called Tzfunei Tzmunei Chol, which is a quote from the pasuk that deals with Zvulun, which Chazal said talks about the chilazon. I'm on page 2 at the top. And he said, we can find the chilazon. And he went on a trip to Naples. He visited the recently opened Great Aquarium in Naples, and he spent a long time there studying. Rav Leiner was a polymath. He was a brilliant Talmid Chacham. He was a brilliant linguist who spoke many languages. He was knowledgeable in chemistry, in engineering, in medicine, and he spent a serious amount of time he was an unusual man. He didn't dress like a rabbi. He dressed in very normal clothes. And he spent time in Italy studying, and he came to the conclusion that the chilazon was the cuttlefish. The cuttlefish, known to us usually as a squid, has a black ink, which as we know, it squirts when it's in danger, and he says that is the ink from which you make the tcheles. And he identified the cuttlefish, he came home, and he publicized this to his people. But it wasn't so straightforward, because when he took the dye from the cuttlefish, initially in Italy, doing experiments, it washed out. It wasn't permanent. And he was very frustrated that the cuttlefish dye, he was convinced, was the correct dye, but it wasn't staying in the cloth. So he put out an advert, and he said, if there are any local chemists who can help me to get this dye to stay fast, then I would appreciate it. And he was helped by one of the local non-Jewish Italians, and he provided him with a number of chemical additives, including iron filings, and he said, try this, and he threw that in, and lo and behold, it came out a beautiful, steadfast, permanent blue. The Radzina was over the moon. He went back to Poland, he publicized this to his Hasidim, and 10,000 Radzina Hasidim were wearing Radzina Tcheles very quickly. He tried to persuade the Gedolim of his time, and like the Oruch HaShulchan said, they were not interested. And he published the correspondence he had with various important Gedolim, such as we'll see later, Rav Yitzchak Yitzchak Spekter, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, the original from Brisk, and he wrote a couple of others for him, Petil Tcheles and Ein HaTcheles, where he sets out his correspondence. And that was the story of the Radzina Rebbe. And there are today, by the way, still people, many people, who wear Radzina Tcheles, Radzina Hasidim, Breslov Hasidim. There are some Breslovers who wear Radzina Tcheles. We had a next door neighbor in Harnof who wore Radzina Tcheles. Around the same time of the Radzina Rebbe, a number of academic advances were made. There was a French zoologist in the 1850s called Henri de la Salle Goutier, and he was sailing around the Balearic Islands, Minorca, and he saw a fisherman there standing up and showing off a little bit, taking a snail, crushing the snail, rubbing it on his shirt, and a sort of yellow, greeny sort of liquid came on his shirt, and as he stood in the sunlight, this zoologist saw the greeny liquid turn a deep purple red. And he realized that this could indeed be the ancient Tyrian purple that comes from a snail, and he investigated this and indeed decided that this was the case. And by the early 1900s, a German chemist, Paul Friedlander, had identified the chemical structure of this dye from this snail as dibromoindigo. And we'll talk a little bit more about this. And he showed that this was a very important chemical that was found in mollusks all around the Mediterranean, specifically the Murex Trunculus. And the Murex Trunculus is going to be the star of our show from now till the end of this year, because these chemists were convinced that the Murex Trunculus was indeed the source of the ancient Tyrian purple. And at that point, into the picture steps Chief Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog. Rav Herzog was born in Russia, and his father actually became a Rav in Leeds, which is my hometown. And Rav Herzog grew up in Leeds about 100 years before I did. He then became the chief rabbi, a rabbi in Ireland. While Rav Herzog was in Ireland, he decided to do a PhD, and he decided to do it on the subject of the Tcheles, or as he called it, Hebrew porphyrology, or porphyrology, not proterology, porphyrology. Hebrew porphyrology, which is, porphyrology means the study of purple. Hebrew porphyrology, he says, was the title of his PhD, and I brought you a note that you can buy it online from Amazon if you want. It's been published recently in a new edition. And he did a lot of research. He was really trying to show that the Rezina Rebbe, maybe he had indeed found Tcheles, but he got a very big shock. He examined the dyeing process of the Rezina Rebbe, and he sent off the Rezina Tcheles to a number of chemists all around Europe. He corresponded with the Rezina factories, and he got their secret formula, which they entrusted him with, and he sent this off to various chemists around Europe. And he was shocked that every single one of them sent back a response which said the same thing. The dye is indeed blue, but this has nothing to do with the cuttlefish. In fact, the Rezina Rebbe had been conned, because this Italian chemist had given him iron filings, which when they reacted with the organic compounds in the cuttlefish blood, produced what we now call Prussian blue, which is an inorganic colour. It's actually ferric ferrocyanide, and the blue had absolutely nothing to do with the squid, with the cuttlefish. All of that just washed out, and what was left was a Prussian blue caused by the iron filings. And Rav Herzog was shocked, because presumably he said the Rezina Rebbe had no clue that he'd been duped in this way, but he concluded very clearly that the Rezina Tcheles was absolutely not authentic. And it cannot be authentic, because it doesn't come from the cuttlefish.
But people still wear it?
Yes, they do. And we'll find out why in a minute. Okay, we'll talk about that too. Rav Herzog was convinced that the correct candidate was indeed the Murex Trunculus, that the local academics had been working with and had concluded was the ancient Tyrian purple. The problem Rav Herzog has, as I mentioned briefly last week, is no matter how hard he tried, he could not get a dye, a colour, which came out blue. The colour always came out purple, which is argaman, but he couldn't get it to come out the colour of Tcheles. And Tcheles is not purple. It is a form of blue. Maybe it's light blue, maybe it's dark blue, maybe it's deep blue, but it's a blue. And therefore he was reluctantly concluded that, look, everything fits, but the colour just doesn't work. And therefore Murex Trunculus cannot be the snail. And he suggested another snail called the Jamphina sea snail, but unfortunately this came out brown and it didn't really work. And he died in 1959 without having solved the mystery of Tcheles, that's where he left it. Yes. We'll talk about that too. We talked about a little bit last week, but we'll come to that too. The reason why the Rezina Hasidim still wear that Tcheles is as follows. Tragically, during the Shoah, the Rezina Hasidus was wiped out in Europe, and all the factories were destroyed. And the Rezina Hasidim, when they regrouped in Israel after the war, they had no idea how to make the Tcheles. So they realized that the one man who has the secret formula is Rav Herzog, who by now was the chief rabbi of Israel. So they wrote to Rav Herzog and said, did you keep the paperwork from 1914 where we sent you the secret formula for the Rezina Tcheles? And he wrote back two things. He said, yes, I did, and this is how you make it, but you should know that it's completely inauthentic because it's, you know, Prussian blue. So they said, thank you very much. They accepted his word on the first part, which is this is how you make it, and ignored him on the second part, which is that this is inauthentic, and decided this was their Masorah, and they wear Rezina Tcheles. Go over to page 3. In the 1960s, in Masada, a piece of Herodian fabric was discovered by Yigael Yadin. Yigael Yadin, of course, was a famous Israeli general in the War of Independence, who became a famous Israeli archaeologist thereafter. This piece of fabric was dyed blue, and tzitzit were found close by. Chemical analysis has shown that this piece of wool actually was dyed with the Murex trunculus snail. How did they get it blue when Rav Herzog could only get it to come out purple? More about that in just a minute. Yigael Yadin actually decided back in the 60s that this wasn't Murex trunculus, but this was probably Kala Ilan. Remember I mentioned last week that there was a fake trellis called Kala Ilan, which comes from the indigo plant. And Yadin decided that actually this was probably Kala Ilan, and these poor people living in Masada had also been duped and been sold fake trellis dye by the Kala Ilan plant, and that's what they'd done. But actually later it was discovered that it was indeed from the Murex trunculus. It's very difficult to tell the difference between them. Remember, we saw the source last week that says from Chazal that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell the difference between Kala Ilan and the real trellis, and certainly Yigael Yadin couldn't. And we've concluded that it's Murex trunculus since. How did it turn out to be blue? So this happened by accident. In the 1980s, there was a chemist working on this called Otto Elsner. And he was preparing this Murex trunculus dye, and he had a number of samples that he was preparing, and he began to notice that he put some by the window, not on purpose. And on cloudy days, they came out purple. But on sunny days, they came out blue. And he realized that actually the difference between argaman and trellis is ultraviolet light. And the reason Rav Herzog had concluded that it must be the Murex trunculus, but the color came out wrong, is because the sun never shines in Dublin. And therefore, Rav Herzog was never able to expose his dyes to ultraviolet light, and therefore they always came out purple. But all you need to do is just put them in the sunshine in Eretz Yisrael, and they come out a beautiful, deep blue. And if you go to the trellis factory, they'll show you this. They'll take the same dye, they'll put one in a cupboard without the sunlight, they'll put one out in the sun, and 40 minutes later they'll pick up the wool, and one is purple, and one is blue. And it's exactly the same dye. Rav Eliyahu Tavge, who is the son of the famous Rav Ben Zion, or Professor Ben Zion Tavge, who rediscovered the Avraham Avinu Shul in Hebron, which is not for now. Rav Eliyahu Tavge became very excited about this, and in the 1980s began to research all the halachic issues. And him, together with a number of other people, Baruch Sturman and others, founded the Ptil Tchelet organization, which now sells thousands and thousands of tzitzis around the world. And the modern trellis industry, if you like, was born in the 1990s.
Is that in Kfar Adumim?
It is in Kfar Adumim, correct. And they also have a snorkeling facility up on Chof Dor. So if you're very adventurous, you can go snorkeling and look for the Murex trunculus of Chof Dor. As I mentioned when Miriam asked last week, the Ptil trellis don't get their Murex trunculus today from Israel. Murex trunculus is an endangered species. You are not allowed to use it. You can take it out of the water, but you have to throw it back in again. So they have various different sources. They went to North Africa, went to Spain, Italy. Now they get most of their trellis from Croatia on the Dalmatian coast. And they harvest snails in their hundreds of thousands, squeeze the little gland, dry the dye, send it in the mail, and it comes to Israel where they reconstitute it and make all the trellis. Fine. I assume they have some kind of mashkiach that goes over there and checks out that everything's okay. Yes?
When we were at A-Lab at the OU in January, we went to a place where they raised these snails.
There is now an attempt to raise them in, if you like, in tame Murex trunculus. Correct. It's very experimental, and it's not clear whether they'll succeed with doing that. They really like to be in the sea. Whether they'll survive in tame conditions is a good question. Now, let's assess the evidence. Let's talk about this for 5-10 minutes. Is Murex trunculus really trellis or is it not? I'm going to give you 16 good reasons why it is and 18 reasons why it's not. Whether they're good or not, you can assess. And on both sides. We might not have time for all of them, but let's see where we get on. First of all, we'll do this quite quickly. It's not complicated. I brought you a picture of the Murex trunculus there on page 3 in the middle. Why do we think that the Murex trunculus is indeed the trellis? Okay, first of all, archaeology. Massive archaeological finds of Murex snails all over dyeing factories in the Mediterranean coast. There is no question at all that the trunculus and similar mollusks were used by the Romans to make purple and blue dye. That is beyond question. The only question is, was this the Jewish Cheles and Argaman or just the Romans? But all over the coast. Archaeological find of blue in Masada, the blue fabric we talked about. Tyrian coins and a coin by from Bar Kokhba with a picture of the Murex snail on the coin. Why would Bar Kokhba put a picture of a Murex snail on a coin? Well, maybe because it's just, you know, a status symbol, or maybe because it's a Jewish symbol, they think maybe probably that is the case. There are detailed descriptions by Pliny, by Aristotle of the snails, how to find them, how to die with them, etc. And then there's Chazal. What did Chazal say about the chilazon? They said, Briyata domel dag. It looks like a fish. Well, does dag mean a fish, or does dag mean a sea creature? So they want to say it means a sea creature. It's buried in the sand. Sfune tmune yam. Well, indeed, the Murex trunculus lives in the sand. It says it has a nartik, Chazal said, and the nartik grows with it. And indeed, the trunculus has a shell which grows with it. Chazal said you need to crack it, potsa'o, and squeeze it. And indeed, in order to get the dye out of the trunculus, you need to crack it. And you need to squeeze the little gland on the top of the murex in order to get the dye out. Chazal say that the dye is steadfast. And indeed, the dye from the murex trunculus is absolutely steadfast. You can put it through the wash, take it to the dry cleaners, put it in a cave in Masada for 2,000 years, and it comes out just beautiful blue like it went in. The Chazal said it's found in northern Israel from Haifa to Tzur, and indeed it is. Chazal say it's only effective when it's squeezed when the snail is alive. And in fact, there is an enzyme, which is a critical agent in the dyeing reaction, which denatures very quickly after the snail dies. So if you catch the snail and put them in the freezer and then try and do it a week later, it won't work. So indeed, it has to be done when the snails are fresh and the enzyme is there. It says, Gufo domiladak, double yam, sorry. It should have said yam. Gufo domiladak. It's a similar color to the sea. I meant to say yam here, sorry, it's a mistake on the sheet. Is indeed the Murex trunculus similar to the sea? Well, the actual snail, when it's polished up, is brown and stripy. Doesn't look anything like the sea. But when it's in the sea, say the Cheles people, it's covered in a kind of sea fouling, which makes it look very, very similar to everything around it. And on that basis, they want to say, Gufo Dome Liyam. It's rare, it's expensive, it's chemically identical with Kala Ilan, and therefore, indeed, like Chazal say, no one could ever tell the difference. And indeed, we have dug up Murex snails in the remains of the homes of the Kohanim in Second Temple Yerushalayim. Why would Kohanim living in Yerushalayim in the Second Temple times have Murex snails around them? So speculate the Chelet people that these may have been shop signs for Chelet shops where people could go and buy their Chelet, and of course what better to use than a shop sign than a Murex trunculus, or maybe they were things owned by the Kohanim who were into Chelet, obviously for the bigger Kohanim. For those reasons and others, people want to say that the evidence is very strong in favor of the Murex trunculus. However, go to page 4, there are many counter claims. First of all, it says, Gufo Dome Liyam, that the body of the snail is similar to the sea. Well, the body of the snail is not similar to the sea. Okay? The shell has sea fouling on it, but who says that that's what the Mishnah means? Everything has sea fouling on it. Everything around the trunculus, the rocks, the sand, they all look the same. Is that what they really mean? And does yam mean the seabed? Maybe it means the sea, in which case it doesn't really look like the sea. Briyata domel dag. Does it really look like a fish? Who says a fish is any sea creature? Maybe a fish is a fish. When it says dag, it means a fish. And it doesn't look like a fish. And it's not a fish. More problematic, Chazal say that the chilazon comes up every 70 years, or some, according to some sources, every 7 years. The Murex trunculus has no such cycle. It doesn't do anything of the sort. So how do we understand that? Maybe it's midrashic, and therefore not to be taken literally. Maybe it just means that it's very hard to find, and then occasionally you find hundreds of them. That's what it means by once in every 70 years. But it's not straightforward, because it doesn't sound like what the sources say in Chazal. The murex produced by the dye produced by the murex is indeed chemically identical to kala ilam, which is good. But the Gemara says there's a test. There's a chemical test. We looked at it last week. Remember, you throw in fenugreek sap and alum and urine, which is matured for 40 days, and you can tell the difference between kala ilam and real chela. Well, if it's chemically identical, why would there be a test? It should come out the same both ways. So they want to claim maybe there are impurities with the indigo, and that's what the test shows, but it's a little bit kvetched. What about the color of the blood? The Rambam says the color of the blood of the that you use of the chilazon is black, which, by the way, fits nicely with the Radzinas, because the ink is black. The secretion from the murex is not black. It's clear. So how does that work? So some answer, well, where does the Rambam get that halacha from? Anyway, we don't find it in Chazal. Chazal say other things about chilazon. It's good for hemorrhoids. It has certain bent tentacles. It has little red fleshy warts. The murex has none of these things. And it's not good for hemorrhoids either. In fact, it apparently gives you a bad tummy. Maybe it's talking about a different kind of chilazon. They question the archaeological evidence. Maybe that was only making purple. Maybe the coins were only giving status symbols. And most importantly, why didn't Chazal just tell us? Meaning they had a Greek word for the murex trunculus. Chazal could have just said in the Gemara in Menachos, the chilazon is whatever the Greek word is there, porphyra. They didn't. The Chazal are full of Greek words. Why all of a sudden they're shy to say this one? For this reason and many others, people say that it could be the murex is not the chilazon. I actually brought you on the bottom, which I'm not going to go through now, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, who is a very major Talmud Chacham in America, who gives shirim on a regular basis on Tanakh. He's a real Tanakh genius. He gave a very long shir detailing many, many reasons why he feels that the murex is not the correct chilazon. And here are just a few of them. He says it talks about zvulun, and the coast is in fact not in zvulun's area, so maybe this is not the chilazon. It talks about there are differences of opinions. He says, how do we know how many strings to tie? We'll talk about that soon. There are different opinions as to how many strings to tie. How can we wear tchelis when we don't know how to resolve those opinions? And you can look in your own time. I brought you a number of different reasons there. Chazal say in the Gemara, for example, that if you trap the snail, if you trap the chilazon on Shabbos, then you're liable for breaking Shabbos because of the mitzvah tzad. So Rabbi Reisman has a very good question, which is, if something is very slow and you catch it, then you're not liable to tzad. Meaning, to catch a cuttlefish really is tzad. But to catch a snail, shkoyach, you caught a snail. Meaning, you just pick it off the ground. How is that tzad? There are answers to that as well. Maybe it's because people normally use traps, and that will be tzad as well. For all of these questions, there's an answer, and for many of these answers, there's a counter question. Bottom line, Rabbi Mendel Singer, in a very long article, which I brought you a reference for at the bottom, his wording is, quote, the evidence against murex trunculus as the chilazon is overwhelming. He feels it's definitely not the chilazon. On the other hand, Rabbi Herschel Schachter, who is the Rosh Hashiva of YU, quotes, he said that it is 99% certain that the murex is the chilazon. Is the chilazon. And the question is, where is everybody coming from on this? Why are some people saying that it's 99% certain that the murex is the correct candidate? And why are other people saying that there is overwhelming evidence that the murex is not the correct candidate? And this is where it gets a little bit tricky. Let's go to the next issue, which is the following question. Okay, let's say there's a suffix. Maybe the murex is the chilazon. Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. Should we wear it anyway? Why not? Let's go along with it. Maybe, let's say you're not convinced, like Rav Schechter, that it's 99% sure. So wear it anyway. What's the downside? And I want to talk a little bit about the arguments pro and the arguments against wearing the tchelet. Today, if indeed it is a suffix. Again, Rav Schechter doesn't really think it is a suffix. He thinks it's 99% certain that it's definitely the right thing. But let's have a look. What are the problems that people have? Why are people so anti? And a number of people are very anti. Rav Chaim Kanievsky has almost like a campaign against chelet. He doesn't like it at all. What's driving this? So here it gets a little bit controversial, maybe a little bit hashgraphic, maybe a tiny little bit political. So let's have a look and see what we have to say. The first reason, which is very much a halachic reason, which is a genuine reason, is masorah. Do we need a masorah in order to start wearing tcheles? And the argument was put when Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the Beit HaLevi, who was living at the time of the Radzina, he wrote back to the Radzina and he says, I don't accept your tcheles. And the reason I don't is because we need a masorah. Unless we have a masorah, we cannot start something new. And therefore, on the basis of the arguments of masorah, even if you're 110% convinced that it's the correct candidate, it doesn't matter. Without a masorah, you cannot start something new. And we have no masorah. We haven't done it for 1800 years. We have no continuous transmission of what that is. The problem is the following. The Beit HaLevi wrote a letter to the Radzina Rebbe. In fact, not quite. The Beit HaLevi asked somebody else to write a letter to the Radzina Rebbe, and the letter that he wrote, which is in the hands of the Soloveitchik family in Israel and in America, basically says, you cannot do it unless you have a masorah, and because you don't have one, it is invalid. Look at Rav Soloveitchik, the recent Rav Soloveitchik's words in number 5. Rav Soloveitchik writes here, he talks about the tcheles frequently, and he talks about in one of the Shirim Lezecha Avi Mori, which he gave in memory of his father, and he says in number 5, it is well known what happened between my grandfather Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi and the Gaon of Radzin. The Rebbe tried to prove, based on much evidence, that this dye was the true tcheles. Rav Yosef Dov objected, saying that conjecture and proofs cannot prove anything concerning matters which rely upon tradition handed down from generation to generation. In such a case, argumentation cannot be the deciding factor. Only tradition itself can determine it. This was the way our father saw it and acted thereon, and that is the way the sons have to continue acting. And Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Ben Soloveitchik from YU, was not in favor of tcheles. And the Soloveitchik family, generally speaking, do not wear tcheles, with a few exceptions that we'll talk about in a minute. The problem is the following. The version of the Beit HaLevi's letter, which the Radzinas have, and which the Radzina published, is not the same as the letter that the Soloveitchiks claim he sent. And the version of the letter that the Radzina Rebbe printed in his book didn't say we can't do without a masorah. It said the following. According to him, the Beit HaLevi said, look, you think it's a cuttlefish. That can't be right, because everybody's known about the cuttlefish through all the generations. And if it really was the cuttlefish, then people would have used it. There's nothing new with the cuttlefish. And therefore, since nobody used the cuttlefish, that is effectively a negative masorah. That is the masorah that the cuttlefish is not correct, because there's nothing new in the cuttlefish. But says the letter published by the Radzina, but if you find me a new fish that nobody knew about before, and find that that's the tcheles, oh, then we can talk. And maybe we'd even be obliged to use it, because then there'll be no reason not to. Now, according to that version of the letter, there's no problem with the murex trunculus, because indeed that is a new thing that nobody knew about before, and so we have this slight difficulty as to know what version of the letter is correct. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein from the Gush was opposed to the tcheles because his halachic mentors, Rav Hutner, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach were also opposed to the tcheles. However, many of the Lichtenstein children do wear tcheles. Rav Moshe Lichtenstein wears tcheles. Rav Meir Lichtenstein wears tcheles. Professor Shai Lichtenstein wears tcheles. So why do they wear tcheles? So we'll see coming up in a little bit. Also, there's a question. Why did Rav Soloveitchik and the Soloveitchiks not have the same version of the letter that the Radzina had? That's the problem. Is it that the Radzina misunderstood the letter? Is it that the guy who wrote the letter on behalf of the Beit HaLevi misunderstood what the Beit HaLevi wanted him to say? Or is it that the Beit HaLevi said one thing to the Radzina and something else to his kids? Which is possible. Rav Herschel Schechter says that the whole argument from Masorah is invalid. The reason they never did it is because they didn't have it. You can't tell me that they never did it because they didn't want to do it when they didn't know about it. So he rejects it entirely. Rav Eliashiv brings down, in one of his tshuvas, that indeed we cannot wear chelet today because we have no Masorah. And this is where it gets a little bit difficult with Rav Eliashiv as well. Because Rav Shechter explains how Rav Eliashiv came to that conclusion. You can read Rav Eliashiv's tshuva. He's very against chelet. But listen to the story. This is at least the story according to Rav Shechter. The Petil Tchelet people came to present chelet to Rav Eliashiv. And he looked at it and he said, very interesting. And he said to them, how much does it cost? And they said, about $100. So he says, if I start wearing chelet, said Rav Eliashiv, and 50,000 other Haredi families decide they also have to start wearing chelet tomorrow morning, do you have enough chelet for everybody? So they said, nothing even close. So how much will chelet cost if 50,000 people want to wear chelet tomorrow? So they said, thousands. So he says, so I'm not going to wear chelet, because if I wear chelet, all these families who can hardly put food on the table, for all sorts of reasons, will feel they have to buy chelet. So I'm not going to wear it. Sorry, I'm not going to wear it. Now, I understand why Rav Eliashiv would say that. That makes a lot of sense. However, somebody, unfortunately, printed that conversation, as I just explained it, that's why Rav Eliashiv doesn't wear chelet, which basically means that he really wants to wear chelet. So when he found that they printed that, he said, somebody has to write in my name that I'm against chelet to stop people from wearing chelet. And that's where the tshuva came from. This tshuva was written in Rav Eliashiv's name, but he claimed that he never wrote it. It was written in his name, with all the reasons why you can't wear chelet, most of which are fairly weak. Okay? And Rav Shechter says it's very strange that Rav Eliashiv, such a Talmid Chacham, would come out with a tshuva with very wishy-washy reasons, and the reason is because he didn't write the tshuva. And afterwards he says he didn't write the tshuva. At least that is the story according to Rav Shechter. You see why it gets a little bit difficult. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was also not in favor of chelet. However, Rav Menachem Borstein, who I met at the chelet factory a couple of weeks ago, said to me, he was just the mikra, he was there, he said to me, he spoke at length with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about chelet. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, I'm not going to come out in favor of the chelet. However, the way to do it, he told me that Rav Shlomo Zalman told him, was the way to do it is get people wearing it, and that will eventually begin, if you like, a new Masorah, and then we'll have a Masorah, and it starts from the ground up, and once people are doing it, then it changes the halachic dynamic. Is that how we do things? Maybe yes. What about Turkey? What's Turkey got to do with anything? Well, Turkey was discovered, as I talked about, we don't have Thanksgiving, Turkey was discovered around 500 years ago, and somebody decided it was basically a big chicken, and since chicken was kosher, turkey was kosher. Now, you're not allowed to eat birds without a Masorah, that they are kosher. So what kind of Masorah can we have from 1500 onwards? And yet many people eat turkey. Well, if you think about it, the potential downside to eating turkey, if it's trade, is much more serious than the potential downside to wearing chelet if it's not authentic. And yet we're all eating turkey. In fact, there's a big sign in the chelet factory which says, if you don't want to wear chelet because you have no Masorah, why do you eat turkey when you also have no Masorah? And indeed, the Nativ said, well, we now have a Masorah for turkey because people have been eating it for the last 400 years in his time, and that's good enough. And that's kind of where Rav Shlomo Zalman was coming from when he suggested this. So the Masorah argument is complicated, but it's there and it's an important one. Next. Yes. And it was wrong. No, Shabbos is not such a problem because you're still yoked to the mitzvah of tzitzit. The problem would only be really... No, because you're still... Everyone agrees that even if you put the wrong chelet in your tzitzit, it's still good tzitzit. And they wouldn't be carrying. The problem will be if you wanted to wear them with shatnas, like the original chelet was. So then if it's wrong, then you're wearing shatnas. But Shabbos is... We'll see, there's very little downside. Let's go on because we only have 10 minutes. What are the other reasons that people say it's not worth it? They say, look, we don't have the paskin. There are many different shitas as to how to paskin, how you tie the chelet, and we'll come to those for just 1 minute at the end. Since we don't know what to do, so you don't know what to do. And there's no Shulchan Aruch that deals with chelet. So, sorry, we don't know what to do. So Rav Shechter responds, that's not a good argument, because the Shulchan Aruch in a number of places, the Mishnah Berurah, indicates in fact what they would hold if they were Tchelet, because there are a few other discussions in the Halachas of Tzitzis, discussions about wearing non-wool together with wool, or tzitzis that break. I put in the footnotes for later, you can read it. And it seems very clear the Mishnah Berurah rules, indeed you have two strings of Tchelet and two strings of Laval. And therefore, don't tell me you don't know how to answer the question. We work out how to answer every other halachic question. You know, how do you, you know, make Shabbos living at the North Pole? We work that one out without the Shulchan Aruch. You can work this one out as well, and there are many indications. Over the page to page 6. Another argument that says don't do it, even if there's a Suffolk, is you're not allowed to do it before Mashiach. We talked about this at the beginning. Rav Moshe Sternbuch says this is the case as well. Rav Moshe Sternbuch says an interesting argument, and this is where he gets hashkafic. He says, look, it's clear from the Arizal that in a time of Hestapanim, when God is so hidden from us, we don't have Tchelet. Says Rav Moshe Sternbuch, in times such as ours, when there's never been a greater Hestapanim, and there's never been a greater darkness that we can't see God, how could you possibly wear Tchelet? Now, of course, that itself is a very major hashkafic debate. Do we indeed live in times in 2017 of the greatest ever Hestapanim? Or do we live in times where there is a very significant Gilui Panim because of the state of Israel, because of Eretz Israel, because of what we've achieved here? And that, of course, goes to the roots of the deep hashkafic debate as to how you see what we have here in Israel. And Rav Moshe Sternbuch, according to his totally legitimate shita, says that it has to come into Tchelet as well. Rav Chaim Kanievsky I talked about as well. He also says the Chazon Ish never wore Tchelet. If the Chazon Ish never wore Tchelet, then we can't wear Tchelet. And it's interesting, to what degree does the opposition to Tchelet come from the fact that the people who started it, the new one, are coming from the YU world, are coming from the religious Zionist world, and therefore, even if it's right, it's kind of wrong. So, okay, that's a political issue. But it's a legitimate question. I think you'd have to be naive not to bring that into the discussion. And by the way, the Chazon Ish, when he was opposed to Tchelet, was opposed to the Razina Tchelet, because he said without a shadow of a doubt, it is not correct. And the implication of the Chazon Ish is indeed if there were a shadow of a doubt, then he would think about it, and he never talks about the Murex Truncheon. There is also a claim made, which is there is a chumrah that the tzitzis have to be the same color as the corner of the beged. And if your tchelet is wrong, then you're wearing blue strings and you don't have a blue corner. So Rav Shechter responds, okay, you're right. If it's wrong, you'll lose that chumrah. But if it's right, then you gain a whole mitzvah. It's a Torah mitzvah to wear tchelet. So we'll for sure forego the potential loss of the chumrah, which everyone agrees b'dieved is not a problem, for the potential upside of wearing what could be real tchelet. By the way, we'll see that the downsides are very limited, because lavan, quote unquote, can actually be any color. Any color. Lavan can be green, lavan can be pink, lavan can be purple. So even if the tchelet is the wrong color, even if it's kala ilan, Kala Ilan, says the Gemara, is invalid for Tchelet, but it's valid for Lavan. So even if you're walking around with the wrong blue, with the wrong Tchelet, so just call it Lavan, and it's just the same as it was before. You lose the Chumrah of not wearing it the same color. Rav Sternbuch says, we're going to have Loisis Goy to do. People are doing different things, and if we have people doing different things, that could be an Isser of Loisis Goy to do. Well, that's interesting. I think a lot of people do a lot of different things in a lot of different minhagim in a lot of different areas, and nobody's worried about gebrocht being loisis gododu, etc. So that's an argument. People argue labal tosif. You can't add to the mitzvahs. If you get it wrong, maybe you're adding to the mitzvahs. There's a halachic rejection of that too. There are Kabbalistic concerns. The Ben Yehoyada, who is the Ben Ish Chai, says that if you get the wrong tchelet, the sitra achra, the dark side, will connect with that tchelet and do bad things. Well, look, I can't argue with that because I'm not a Kabbalist. And indeed, if you're coming from a really Kabbalistic place, then fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with the Ben Yehoyada on Kabbalah, but I'm not a Kabbalist, and most people are also not followers of the Kabbalah of the Ben Yehoyada necessarily, and therefore that's not so relevant. There's also a question, or it might not be relevant, there's also a question of, are you allowed to use a non-kosher species to do a mitzvah? And the answer is yes, and there's a whole article that I've referred you to in the footnotes that tells you more about that. Let's look for the last 5 minutes at what I think are the most important arguments, which are the arguments in favour. Let's say the tchelis is the wrong tchelis. Should we still wear it? So the first argument I want to mention is safek d'oraisa l'chumra. There is a principle in halacha, safek d'oraisa l'chumra, that if you're not sure and the inyan is an inyan d'oraisa, then you should do it in case it's correct. Why don't we turn around and say, of course you have to wear today the murex trunculus tchelis, because it's a safek, and safek d'oraisa l'chumra, and you should go strictly on this. So the briskers want to argue that safek d'oraisa l'chumra is only when you know that you will definitely do the mitzvah if you do it again. For example, let's say I had a safek lulav, and I shook with it. And now I have a vadai lulav, I should use the other one in case I didn't do the mitzvah, because now for sure I'll do the mitzvah. But with tchelis, I don't know. Maybe it's right, maybe it's not right. There's no element that you can wear it as many times as you like. It doesn't make it any more right. So maybe safek d'oraisa l'chumra doesn't apply. Others say it does apply because we don't follow that last halachic argument. Like I said, there's no downside if it's the wrong color. And most important is Rav Shechter's argument on Bal Tigra. And this I really want to finish on, just subject to the last little point. What is Bal Tigra? Bal Tigra is not to deviate or to detract or subtract from the mitzvah. What does Bal Tigra mean? So there's a Rashba in Rosh Hashanah, I think, that says the following. Bal Tigra is not if you have three parshas in your tefillin, or if you take three species on Sukkot. That's if you just didn't do the mitzvah then. Bal Tigra is when you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah fully, but you choose not to do it fully. For example, you have enough blood to sprinkle on all four corners of the Mizbeach, but you only sprinkle on one, and your yotze, you're fine b'di'eved, but you chose not to do the mitzvah properly. Okay, b'di'eved, you did it, but you could have done it better, says the Rashba. That's Bal Tigra. That's Bal Tigra. And Bal Tigra is an Issa d'oraisa. Comes along Rav Shechter and says, if tchelis is correct, and you do have an opportunity to do it, and you choose not to, and you only wear white in your tzitzis, you are in danger of violating the Torah prohibition of Bal Tigra. And it would be better, says Rav Shechter, not to wear tzitzit at all. Because tzitzit themselves are not an obligation. You don't have to wear tzitzit. You don't have to wear a four-corner garment. If you want to, you choose to, then you become obligated. So he says, Shkoyach, you're now wearing tzitzit to volunteer to do a mitzvah, which in the process causes you to do an Issa d'oraisa. Leave them in the cupboard. Therefore, for those reasons, and many others, Rav Shechter says absolutely people have to wear tchelis, and the murex trunculus tchelis is the tchelis, which is the right one. I brought you just for you to look at, if you like looking at the pictures later on. Look at page 8 for a second. I brought you some different opinions as to how to tie the tchelis. There is a difference of opinion as to whether you have two strings of blue and two strings of white, one string of blue and three strings of white, one string of blue and seven strings of white, or how you do it. I brought you all of the details here. I can't do this so quickly. And I also brought you the chemistry of tchelis at the bottom if you're interested in looking at the issues. It's basically the bromine, the bromine molecules that make the purple. Once you can cut the bromine off, then the thing turns blue. Where does that leave us? Well, let's just say it's complicated. There are more and more people that wear tchelis. Full disclosure, I do not currently wear tchelis. Although I cannot guarantee that I never will. And indeed, I do find the evidence very, very persuasive on many different levels. And we'll see if I walk in one day with a little bit of blue hanging out of my sisters, then you'll know I've been converted to the cause. Okay, well, I don't need to wait for Mashiach comes to make a decision on this, but please God, Mashiach will be here before I have to. One last point, just in terms of housekeeping. Next week, please God, and the week after that, we will be having three shiurim about Yerushalayim, in honor of Yerushalayim, in the lead-up to Yom Yerushalayim. On Yom Yerushalayim itself, there will not be a shiur because everything is too busy around here. But please God, for the next 3 weeks, we'll be talking about Yerushalayim, Harabait, going on to Harabait. Spivak, you have a question?
Hi, I just wanted to make an announcement. I want to thank Rabbi Danny for all the You want to take the mic?